This season of the Peaches podcast is brought to you by our friends at Silverette. Now, many of you will know that this is a product that I have long sung the praises of. In fact, these little cups made up of antifungal, antimicrobial, healing, medical grade silver single-handedly saved my left nipple from early retirement when it came to breastfeeding. These are my go-to gift for any new mum. The Silverettes are simplistic genius. Little cups to protect and heal your nipples when you are in the trenches of learning how to breastfeed. Sore, oversensitive, cracked or even bleeding nips, no more. Guys, I have an exclusive discount for anyone wanting to give the new mum in their life the gift they will be thanking you for in years to come. 20% off using the code TORY20. Simply head to silverettaustralia.com. Now, this expires on the 30th of June, 2023, so you don't want to muck about. The link is in our show notes. Welcome, Juliet. Yay. I'm so happy to have you here.
I'm excited.
Me too.
Thanks for having me.
Oh my God. Thank you for making time for me. So Peachy fam, today I am interviewing Juliet Allen. Juliet is a global leading sexologist and mentor. She empowers men and women to embrace their sexuality and transform their sex and relationships. She is well known for her bold, straight to the point manner and authentically sharing her own experience as a lover of all things sex, sensuality, and business leadership, which I love because I kind of, you know, it's really nice when someone gives you their personal take on things. So Jules and I have been following each other for a while and we've sort of become what I guess what you'd call Instagram friends. We've been supporting each other with the growth of our businesses, and Juliet has trained with us online during her pregnancies.
I sure have. Yeah, you Peaches saved me postpartum, actually, with my little boy, my last boy. Just, I remember, yeah, I started doing Pilates. I think I reached out to you and was like, I feel like shit in my body, help.
That's right.
And you were like, I've got you, don't you worry, let's do this. And I started, I remember I started going under the house to like our little gym area and doing it every morning. And within a week, I was like, oh my God, thank you. I feel so much better already.
It's purely, so, I mean, I wish I could say it's all us, and we do try to create a space where women are held, but like so much of that is literally taking the step to do something for you that is movement, even if it is 10 minutes. Like, we all know how transformative it is. We just need to remind ourselves. But it's awful when you feel shit in your body.
It is. But you know what I loved about you guys was that you had been through, I think you were pregnant when you were teaching, and then the other teacher was postpartum. And so it felt relatable, and that's what I loved as a in that postpartum phase and now pregnant again, is that I can learn, like be taught by women who understand.
Yeah, it's kind of like
to be pregnant.
Totally. It's all well and good if it's like a 10 out of 10 24-year-old who's like barely has a stretch mark and you're like, mate, I've given birth. I don't feel as though I can relate to you right now. So yeah, we've definitely put a massive effort into, I mean, we've, you know, Beck and I filmed while we were in the thick of our pregnancies, often really sick ourselves spewing. Beck did such amazing work with the postnatal program, filmed throughout her journey, you know, talking about how, you know, this is the first time I've worn a tight top since I've had my baby, or like I've stopped breastfeeding now, or like my back's fucked. So thank you. I'm so glad you found it relatable.
Yeah, it was really relatable.
This potty has been a long time in the making. I'm so excited
it sure
to
has.
Deep dive into the intimate, complicated, and ever-evolving world that is sex and relationships. There's so much that I wanted to ask you today, but I had a good long think, and we both decided that talking about when your relationship needs work was what we were going to focus on today. I think it's relatable.
It's an important one.
Yeah, it is. And I think it's a nice starting point for us. And then basically, FYI, I'm going to have you back. We're going to talk about lots of other things.
You know what? I thought that this morning. I thought, oh, no, this is going to start something. And
I know. We won't be able to shut up.
Yeah, I know.
But I think a lot of our listeners are going to be able to relate to this subject. You know, a lot of our girls might be at that tipping point of a relationship where they're about to take the next step towards bigger commitments, whether that's moving in together or marriage or children. Or there are people, you know, perhaps more like myself, who are deep in the folds of like a few chapters ahead, where it's like young children, mortgages, career progression. Whose job do we, you know, we're triaging here. Whose job's more important today because the nanny called in sick? And of course, the overwhelming and relentless toll of mental load. I feel like that's such a buzzword at the moment, but fuck, it's something me and my friends talk about a lot.
Yeah, yep. Yeah, I love how you mentioned, I guess, as parents, that when you are running your own business, as we are, but then your partner also has their career going, and it's like, yeah, what takes priority? That's a big one in our relationship at the moment, actually. Okay, the nanny's called in sick, so like, so
whose day's going to be fucked now and who's going to be playing catch up all week?
Yeah.
And I actually asked my followers yesterday what they wanted me to ask you, and I got so many good juicy questions. I ended up just picking five because otherwise I would actually be holding you captive for about 5 hours. But if you did send in a question and you don't hear yours today, it's probably because what I'd already written was very similar to what people were asking. So I think everyone's like, you know, I was like, okay, you know, here's what I would want to know, or here's what I personally want to know. So I'm going to start with my questions. I've selected five of mine and five directly from the Peachy fam. So should we just go for it?
Yeah, let's just jump straight in.
Let's do it. Okay.
I love this. I love Q&As.
Oh my God, me too. And we're just, by the way, side note, Jules and I are both preggy, rocking our bumps today. So that in itself is an interesting time in your sex life. Let's talk about that at the end. My first question, I'd really love to start with the problem that is set and forget in a relationship. So it's something that I see a lot of, and I think along the way we have forgotten, as like perhaps Western society, I don't know, how much love, care, affection, attention and affirmation a romantic relationship needs. Like, I guess if you compare, you know, how you talk to your friends, how, if you have children, how you talk to them, how you talk to your family, like I often think to myself, like, are people talking to their romantic partner in the same way? Or are they just like, oh, I'm married now, that's that, set and forget?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a big one. We can really tend to take each other for granted, especially in long-term relationships. We kind of move through the like so-called honeymoon phase, and then, which is when we're just obsessed with each other and just, you know, full of compliments and all the things and affection and love and sex and everything's going great. And then it can be like 3 months down the track or 3 years down the track, and suddenly we kind of wake up next to each other and get out of bed, instead of be like, roll over and be like, wow, I'm next to the most epic human, you know. And seeing our lovers with fresh eyes each day it's really something we need to be reminded to do. So the set and forget thing is real, and I guarantee most people listening who are in a long-term relationship will be like, oh, yeah, this is happening for us, or this happened in my last relationship, that's why it broke up, or whatever. Yeah, it's huge.
And so I love what you said just then about looking at your partner with fresh eyes. Like, what are some easy ways for people to kind of implement that in their life? Like, what are some easy, like, just day-to-day things to make you kind of stop and just recognize your partner for how wonderful they are?
I think the first thing is being aware that just because we met someone and they were a certain way at the start of our relationship, it doesn't mean that they're not going to be ever changing and evolving over time. And so we can become really complacent and, like I said, take our partner for granted, thinking, you know, this is who they are. But in reality, they're also living their own individual, they're having their own individual experience of life, and we all change and evolve. So if we can be aware of that, and then when we wake up or when we walk through the door at the end of the day or whatever it is, just have that in the back of our awareness that perhaps they experienced something today that made a big difference to them or changed the way they think, or they had a conversation, or, you know, they've moved through something difficult in their life that has changed their perspective, then we can start to begin to get curious about how they're changing and evolving. And it's like getting to know someone new every day in a way, and asking more questions and being present. And, you know, instead of just making dinner, sitting down, eating, watching your favorite show and going to sleep, make dinner together, or just take that time before you turn on the television to just sit down and be like, how are you? How was your day? You know, all those little things, like, it sounds so simple, but it gets missed in so many relationships, mine included. We can become really just like, it's kind of like we just assume we know what the other person's up to, or, you know, how they're feeling, but it's not always the case.
I love that concept. We know just how they're feeling. So simple. Like, and I think that's such a big takeaway from that question, is just being curious about your partner. Don't assume you know about their day. Don't assume you know how they're feeling. Ask them, and like genuinely ask them. Put your fucking phone down, turn away from the television, look them in the eye and ask them how their day was, or like, hey, tell me something that happened in your day that I might not have known. I love that. Be curious. Yeah, that's really nice. And that is something that we can all do, you know? And how nice is it? Oh, sorry. How nice is it when someone is curious about you, you know?
Yeah, it feels really good to have someone interested. And that creates intimacy and connection, which then creates an environment where we feel loved and safe, and then we want to have more sex. So, you know, if you're not getting any, maybe show a bit more
curiosity. Take a few steps back. What went on earlier in the day?
Yeah, rather than just get your, can I say?
You can say whatever the fuck you want, girl. Yeah.
Yeah. Rather than just expecting our partner to get their dick out or whatever, or, you know, just get naked and go. The other thing I wanted to say was listening is just such a key piece to that. Like, we can be curious, but then our partner can begin to open up, and then one thing that most people do is then jump in and go, oh, yeah, I thought so, or, oh, well, like, let's fix it, wanting to fix if they open up about, say, a challenge they're facing, or, yeah, I knew that already, or whatever it is. And then we shut each other down. And then we don't want to talk anymore. Especially with men, you'll notice that I notice, and I've taught a lot of people about this way of listening, if you ask a question and your partner, specifically men I'm talking about, but women also, if you just let them talk and then allow there to be silence when they finish and just be like, I hear you. And then just wait and see what happens. Often they keep talking and they keep talking. You don't really need to say anything. It's really, really cool. Try it out if you're listening. Next time your partner begins to open up, don't feel the need to say anything. Just listen. And then if they don't say anything else, say, is there anything else you'd like to add or anything else you'd like to share? And Nick does this for me. He's really good if I'm in a bit of a tizzy or like need to talk about something, and then I start sharing, and then I'm like, yeah, anyway, I think that's everything. And he's like, is there anything else? And I'm like, yes, actually there is. And then it spirals, but it's like it gives me the opportunity to just talk,
let it out, rather than love that,
have solutions thrown at me.
It is such a learnt skill. And it's interesting because I'm obviously at that stage in my life where I'm really conscious and reading up on and trying to like update my skill set on like parenting and listening to children and making them feel heard. But like it really just like,
you should just apply the same rules to anyone who's a human being. You know, like I keep trying to think about how I want to listen to Isabella and not put thoughts in her head. And you know, if she has a problem, even now as a toddler, you know, she has not got many words, but I do try to hear her and listen to her. So that's a really cool thing to remember with your partner. And I totally agree with you with men. It can take them that little bit longer to open up. So the next time Chris is venting, I'm going to do that because I don't know what – I think sometimes as women you want to fill the space or you want to even just validate how they're feeling, you know, even just make them feel, you know, heard. But sometimes the best way to make someone feel heard is to shut the fuck up and see if they've got anything else that is going to come out of their mouth. This actually leads me to a question that I had and it's a concept that I really resonated with. I think I saw it on Instagram a couple of years ago. Basically, the idea is that we're talking about how to respond to someone when they're upset or frustrated or angry. And instead of trying to fix the problem or immediately point out, you know, what your partner could have done to avoid that situation, take a breath, choose empathy, and ask them this question, which is, do you want a solution from me or do you just want to be heard? And I remember saying this to Chris a couple of years ago and I was like, because, babe, sometimes, like, because men are fixers, right? I'm like, sometimes when I tell you something that's wrong, I'm just telling you, like, I don't want you to fix it. And I really think that that is such an amazing thing to keep in the back of your mind when you're in a long-term relationship. So can you talk to me about some tips that you have for people in relationships when they're facing times of difficulty and how you can respond in terms of like when someone's trying to communicate with you? Like if you've given us one, which is just stop, ask them if they're going to add more. Are there any others that you think that come to mind?
The other really good question you can ask someone is how can I best support you right now? And this is not just for partners but for best friends, colleagues, whatever. Yeah, like I ask it to, you know, my girlfriends a lot if they're going through challenges and I, you know, say, you know, here you have your texts back and forward and they're just like, and then this happened and I'm just feeling really overwhelmed. And so instead of me going, well, you know what you could do, you could go do this, I often will say, how can I best support you right now? And then that gives them an opportunity to be like, okay, what I need, or they ask me, how can I best support you? And then I'm like, well, actually, I really just recently I was going through stuff. And so lots of my friends, the best way they could support me was to bring a meal over and just drop it off so that we had food. Like we had food, but
so it's always the biggest one, isn't it?
And I didn't have to cook. Yeah, just practical help. And so the same goes for relationships. When we're going through challenges or we are, basically challenges, it's like, how can I best support you?
And I love that.
Then you can understand what they need rather than assume what your partner needs or what they need to hear. And in that moment, that's when you can say, I just want you to listen. I just want you to listen. I don't want solutions. I just want to be able to talk about it.
I love that tip. It's actually something that I'm going to take away. It's particularly relevant probably to my husband and I because we work together as well. So we're always, we're juggling a lot. And I think that the next time Chris comes to me with a work problem, if I say, okay, how can I best support you? Like he will feel like I've opened up the opportunity for him to be like, okay, well, if you can just take this, whether it's part of the job or if I just take Izzy for a couple of hours so he can just like get in the zone. I think that's a really nice piece of advice. Thank you.
It's a good one. It's a really good one.
Let's talk about growing apart. It's something that I'm assuming that you see a lot of in your practice. Is this an inevitable factor of long-term relationships or is it a choice we make? Perhaps so much a choice to grow apart, but a choice not to spend time actively connecting or reconnecting.
I think it's just something that seems to happen in most long-term relationships. Again, we go through the honeymoon period and then we're like, let's move in together and it's all exciting and we're sharing a space and you know, we do special things for each other, and then we just settle into life together. And it's very common for relationships to just kind of, like you said, grow apart. And it's a tricky one. It's a hard one for me to give tips to people in general without knowing why you've grown apart, or, you know, what factors have contributed to that. But often it can just be, it's like this cultural thing. Like, we don't really have, not many of us in our generation have really great role models who have modeled to us what it's like to be in a thriving, loving, intimate, connected relationship. Many of us have grown up in households where that isn't the case, or have had people around us who aren't the best role models, not at any fault of their own, but that's just, we haven't grown up with that. And so we don't really know. Like, it's something to learn to have a really great relationship. It's not something that comes naturally. I don't even know what question you asked me. So can we just circle back to...
I think I almost, to be fair, it's probably my fault. I wonder if it was more of a statement. I guess I had asked, like, is it something that you see a lot of? Which I'm assuming the answer is yes.
Yes.
Yeah. And yeah. What are some examples of factors that you think have contributed to that?
Look, busy lives. I feel like many of us are living just such busy lives now more than ever, especially with the rise of women who want to have our career. We also want to parent. We want to do it all. And as opposed to, for example, perhaps when my mum was bringing me and my brother up, my dad was at work and mum was an at-home mum, and she had that, I guess, being an at-home mum is the biggest job of all, let's face it. It's like a 24/7 role. But there's a lot more factors contributing to us being busy as women, but also as men. And then with technology coming in and social media and all that, we just don't stop. And I think that's a huge factor that's contributing to relationships breaking down, is the fact that we don't switch off at the end of the day. We come home from work and then we cook dinner while we're scrolling through our emails, and then we go to bed and we're scrolling through the news or whatever it is, the extreme examples. And that leads to lack of connection, kind of just like creating distance between two people.
Massively. I mean, even if you literally think about it, if I'm like this, how the fuck are we connecting right now, you know?
Yeah. Yep. Just for your information, Tori had her phone in front of her face.
Sorry, guys. That was such a podcast rookie thing to do. Yes, I just picked up my phone and I put it in front of my face. And that it just provided this like physical block, you know, which gave us a nice visual.
Yeah. The other thing that really I think couples struggle with is parenting together, and this is on topic for us, but, you know, once kids are in the picture, there's so much less time for each other, and we can make time, but in reality, when we're parenting a child 24/7 around the clock, relationships change, and there's less time for sex, there's less time for intimacy. Everybody has their different setup with sleeping, but if you have your bub in the bed with you, you know, it changes the dynamic in bed, all the things, breastfeeding, everything changes it all. So that's a huge one that people come to me, couples with kids come, and they're like, oh my God, what the fuck is going on? Like, we love our baby, but our relationship is falling to bits before our eyes. Yeah, that's a big one.
What are some tips that you give new parents on ways to reconnect?
One of the biggest tips is actually not what lots of people would think, but the first tip I give people is to make sure that they're first prioritizing themselves and having some time to themselves. Because if we don't feel like our cup is full, so to speak, and we don't feel like really great within ourselves, then what we're bringing to our relationship is a version of ourselves that isn't filled up and whole and feeling great. So the first step is find some time for yourself just to reconnect with you. So for mums, for new mums, especially, you know, in those first few months, that can be difficult because naturally we want to be with our bubs 24/7. And we, you know, if we're breastfeeding, that's, we need to be with our children. But something that Nick and I have done since Sol was about, I don't know, 3 months old or something, is we have allocated mornings. So 4 mornings a week, Nick gets up with Sol and he like gives him brekkie and takes him for a bike ride or takes him for a walk or whatever. So that I have that morning till 9 a.m. when Nick kind of starts work to myself. So on those mornings, I get to either sleep in or I go and do Pilates or, you know, do something for myself. And then on Nick's mornings, he'll go surfing or go to the gym or have a sleep in, whatever. And what that's allowed us to do is just firstly have solitude, which then means we come into the relationship together happier. And then the next bit of advice I give couples is just to prioritize the relationship and connection and intimacy, whatever, in whatever way that means for you. It could mean that, you know, one night a week is like we go out for dinner and it may be you're taking the children with you, but that we do something fun together and we have like a fun time, whatever that is for you. For us, it's like getting down to the beach on the weekends, or a lot of the time we go down to the local like river/creek area, which is so beautiful in the afternoon at around 4:35, and we just like go for a swim. You know, do stuff that you love together and prioritize that, and prioritize time also without the kids when they're old enough to leave them with somebody. Yeah,
man, I resonate massively with that concept of solitude, just giving yourself a couple of hours to be alone. Chris and I are both trying to do that a little bit more for each other. And there's just been a couple of times in the past couple of months where I've gotten a morning to myself or half a day to myself. And a lot of it is, you know, based like I'm working, but having this, the house empty and just doing a few things for me, I cannot tell you how much it transforms the way that I feel. And I think that, you know, obviously that we're getting quite niche here and we are talking about parents, and particularly parents of young children, because when your children are older, they will go to school and stuff like that. But fuck it, there's heaps of people who are in our shoes as well. It is something that is actually really hard to find a time to yourself. And I really notice that when I get, and it doesn't take long, it can literally be 1 hour or 2 hours, how different I feel. And what you said makes so much sense. Like, of course, you're then going to come back into that relationship and come back into the space of your partner and be more willing to connect, more willing to be intimate because you've had a second. And I think that's probably particularly relevant to women, because I think women can sometimes, you know, I have a lot of friends who are like, I'm, you know, part of like my problem in my sex life is I'm touched out. I don't have the capacity to be intimate with my partner because I have had children on me all day. And this is probably particularly for the mums who are fucking, God bless them, stay-at-home mums. I don't know how those women do it, because as much as my job is really demanding and full-on and exhausting, it's also like my biggest days are the days when I'm just parenting, when I'm solo parenting. I find they are the most exhausting. So, you know, like I remember one of my friends, my friends said to me years ago, she had kids a good few years before we did, and she's a really like high performing job in advertising, and she was like going to work as a holiday. And I always remembered that. It's something that I've thought myself a few times, but I think probably because I have the privilege of really loving my job and loving what I do. I mean, this is work right now. Who would have thought it? Having a good old chat with you about sex. How good. Okay, Jules.
You know what? I just want to mention, if people are listening that don't have kids, it's the same advice though. It's like get solitude so you feel great, and then allocate date nights, prioritize time with each other, set the same time each week to go out for dinner or do whatever you love to do together. But stop using the excuse of I'm too busy to not connect. It's like, it's a stupid excuse. I'm sick of hearing it.
Yeah. You fucking crack that whip. You aren't too busy. Yeah, if you can be on Instagram.
You're not too busy.
Yeah.
Priority, like prioritize something different to what you're prioritizing now.
I agree. And we all fall victim to it. We're all naughty and say we don't have time, and then somehow we've spent 20 minutes on Instagram. God knows where that, you know, rabbit hole.
Scrolling through just random shit online when we could be connecting with our partner or with ourselves.
Yes. Yes. Have that discipline and that self-control. Okay, let's go there. Let's talk about losing intimacy, and I want to start specifically with intimacy in the bedroom. However, I do believe that intimacy in everyday life is like intrinsically linked to our sex life. Like if you're having a cuddle in the kitchen or a little kiss for no reason, you're probably going to be helping your time in the bedroom. But let's talk about for anyone out there who feels like their sex life is gone, it's out the window, where do we start to get it back?
Oh, well, we kind of touched on everything. It's stuff that people think I'm going to give them, like, well,
get this vibrator. You're saying, no, go have a coffee by yourself. I like it.
Yeah. Like, yeah, it's really, I work pretty holistically like that. I don't just go, oh, you should read this book and it's got these really cool positions and it's going to turn him on or her on. It's like, no, go get some time to yourself, fill up your own cup, exercise, eat well, do all the things that physically will make your body sing so that your libido is pumping. Because what happens when we're busy and stressed, we're not feeding our body great food and we're not moving it, as you know, is we start to feel like shit, basically. But our libido actually naturally decommissions itself and turns itself off because we're doing so much so many other things that it's like, okay, right now is not the best time for her to be outputting any more energy, let alone sexual energy that could lead, if you're in a heterosexual relationship, to more babies. So I'm switching it off, and that's naturally what happens. So if you're busy parenting, you know, if you're like me right now, I'm breastfeeding and I'm pregnant, it's a lot. And running a business, it's a lot. So naturally my libido is lower than when I'm not pregnant, not breastfeeding, you know, going to Pilates every day, like drinking my water, you know, all the things, doing everything right. So that's one thing to look at if you feel like the intimacy is lost, is just, yeah, not just what are you doing wrong or what am I doing wrong or we need more date nights. It's like, what can I do for myself to increase that drive and that juice inside, you know, that
and how can you do it
energy?
Yes, and how can you do it for your partner? I really like this concept of, and I think there are a lot of people out there have this perception that a sex therapist is going to talk about a certain tool you can bring into the bedroom or a book you can read or whatever, or fucking practice hand holding for 20 minutes at the end of the day. I love that you're saying actually step it right back and look at the two individuals, because it takes two to tango. How can partner A and partner B be the best versions of themselves? Because when you are feeling awesome, you do want to have sex. And I think people forget that your health is also reflected in your sex drive. Like if you're not healthy and you're not looking after yourself, your sex drive, as you just said, will plummet. Your libido is one of the first things to go, purely from a biological perspective. Mm-hmm. So that is so interesting. Mm-hmm. I think that's really awesome advice. Also, it feels like quite approachable and manageable and like something that people can actually do, because I think a lot of people are like, oh, my sex life is waning, I don't want to get into this hippy dippy stuff, I don't know where it's going to go. But if it's like, oh, hey, babe, did you know that actually you might feel like getting down with your partner if you just go and have an afternoon to yourself? And then if you say to your partner, hey, like, why don't I do XYZ today, whether that's I'll walk the dog instead of you, or I'll cook dinner, or I'll take this off your hands if you've got kids, go to the gym, have some time for you. The chances are your partner's then going to come back from having that time and they're going to feel so grateful that you allowed them the space to have to themselves.
Yeah, definitely. And it works, you know, both ways. Like for us, Nick needs more solitude than me. So I know that if he's stressed or he's tired or his libido is low or whatever, if I say to him on a Saturday, like, go surfing, take your time. Like I've got this with the kids. Just enjoy. And not be like, well, what time are you coming back? Like, where are you going? Who are you going with? Well, remember that, you know, I need time too, like all this shaming and taming and blaming. Then he comes back and he's just like instantly softer, instantly more loving. You know, like it really helps. So we've got to do that for each other. And the other thing is if you're sitting about complaining that, which I get a lot with clients, like, oh, my partner, you know, he doesn't want to have sex with me anymore, or she doesn't want to have sex, or one, you know, the mismatched sex drive thing, which is very common and it ebbs and flows throughout a relationship. But sometimes if we're complaining a lot, what I ask people to do is kind of, how do I say this? Ask yourself, if I was with me in relationship with me right now, would I want to be having sex with me? Like, am I turning myself on? Do I find this state of being attractive? Because when we can kind of step out of how we are being in life, you know, we could be busy, stressed, negative, in victim mentality, but then we're like, and he doesn't want to fuck me. It's like, well,
I wouldn't want to fuck you either, mate. Yeah.
Either.
I love
yeah,
that.
Yeah, it's like you're not looking after yourself. So take a good hard look at what you're choosing for your life, what lifestyle you're choosing, etc. And first find yourself attractive first, because no one else is going to if you don't first.
I love that. Yeah. That actually leads me to like another thought that I had written down, which is that I think that our sex lives can be drastically affected by how we're getting on with our partner on a day-to-day basis. I mean, no one wants to give their partner a mind-blowing blowjob if they've been pissing them off all day.
No.
I think we should talk about this frustration that can build up in relationships and you're kind of grinding against each other because of a lack of communication. And that is linked so much to what you just said. Like if everything that comes out of your mouth to your partner is a complaint or a request, or, you know, if you're grumpy and if you're not like being affectionate and kind to them, then yeah, your sex life is probably going to suffer.
Your sex life is doomed if you're like that all the time.
Yeah. So how do people, what would you suggest to someone who said, I'm in such a rut with my partner, every time I speak to them, I can't help myself. I've only got insults. They irritate me over the tiniest little things. I need to get out of this rut. So because, you know, on top of that, he doesn't want to fuck me. What would you suggest?
Well, I would suggest if you're in that stage of a relationship to get some support outside of the relationship. So if you can afford to find yourself a coach or therapist or somebody who can help you navigate this time in your relationship, and whether that's just you going by yourself or perhaps you both go by yourself and then you come together and you have a couple session. So I find that really, really handy in my own relationships. All of them, I've had therapy. Even when things are good, Nick and I do monthly therapy with our therapist as a couple and then monthly individually. And even if sometimes we go, oh, we've got a session with Susan tomorrow, and then we're like, and sometimes I'm like, there's nothing really. And he's like, we're doing it. There's always something. And then it really helps us unpack stuff that's coming up, or perhaps unpack stuff that I didn't realize he was feeling, you know, and it kind of unravels with the support of someone who can help us talk about it. So if you want really great help, find someone great to help you.
And be proactive. I love that you are actually someone who practices what they preach. And even when things are pretty smooth sailing, just being proactive enough to be like, no, our relationship deserves work. Let's take this hour out of our day. Let's invest financially in our relationship. I think I think that's awesome. And I really believe that in Australia we are slowly coming around, but there is still a stigma around therapy. And I don't know anyone who's had therapy who hasn't like had it like significantly improve their life. And I think part of that is self-awareness. It's something that is really difficult to grasp, and therapy seems to help people understand how they, like, they're in control of their path and they are impacting mm-hmm. where their relationship goes.
Mm, definitely. Yeah. The other thing that's a killer for relationships is resentment. And, like, if there's resentment in the relationship and it's been going on for a while, it's just guaranteed the relationship will end at some point, or you'll be miserable for the rest of your life. There's no doubt about it. So having that self-awareness when you do feel resentful and then communicating that to your partner is really important. So, yeah, when I feel resentful, you know, an example could be like Nick, I don't know. Sometimes I feel resentful when he gets to work more than me and assumes that I'm just going to do all the parenting. That's just something that comes up for us, even though we both run businesses. And so that's something that I communicate to him is like, hey, I'm just feeling like there's resentment coming up and I just want to voice it because I don't want it. I don't want to feel this way.
You don't want it to fester.
But this is why I'm... Yeah, and so we kind of have a chat about it. And it's not always easy bringing those things up because, you know, sometimes at the end of the day, it's the last thing you want to do is then have a serious conversation. It's like, no, I'll leave it till tomorrow. It's so easy to do that. But it's also so easy to let resentment build up and build up and suddenly you're just like, oh, our relationship is shit.
And when a window presents, yes, when a window presents itself, I think you have to take it. We actually have a, what's the word? We have like a rule that we live by, Chris and I, in our business, and we also try to live by it in our personal lives. And it's something that Chris has come up with, and he said, it's have the conversation. So whether it's an easy one or not, you have to have that conversation. And I, probably much to Chris's dismay, I'm really, really conscious of building up resentment and I hate letting things fester. So I will almost always like right then and there tell him if something has irritated me just because I don't want to then hold on to it and blow up at him because he cut a tomato the wrong way a week later, you know? Like, so I really do. I'm trying to remember the full story, but, like, I had this resentment piece come up. It was a while ago. It was, I think it was, there was, like, a big footy game on and we'd had, Izzy had just been sick. I was freshly pregnant and, like, fucking vomiting nonstop and, Chris was like, two of the guys are going to come over and we're going to watch the game. And I was like, of course, like, but also like, fuck, this is the last thing I feel like accommodating in our household, but that is fine. And then he's like, and so-and-so told old mate and, you know, he told him and then someone messaged me and he said, I could not invite him. And suddenly we've got like 15 people and their children coming to our house they need to eat. And of course, I know that I don't need to put that on myself, but if we're going to have people over to the house and food's going to be provided, I'm going to be involved and I want it to be a fun and good experience because that is my love language and I'm not comfortable with just fucking opening a bag of chips and saying, go for it. Like, I want to put a spread on, you know, that's my vibe. And suddenly I was like, I'm cleaning the house and he doesn't expect me to, but I will do it. And then there was this question of whether some of the children were sick. And I was like, if Izzy gets a cold and I'm up every night and I'm pregnant, like I'm just like, I actually had to message the group and be like, I'm going to be really transparent here and say that if your child has a sniffle, do not come to our house because it is my pet peeve when people rock up with sick kids. And it's like, dude, that could fuck me for a week, particularly when I'm pregnant. So anyway, right before people came over, I was like, hey, I'm going to be on my A game whenever I walk through the door. I'm going to be hostess with the mostess, and I'm going to enjoy it, and we're going to have a really fun afternoon. However, I just need to say that, like, this is not what I wanted, and it really irritated me that, like, somehow, like, our entire afternoon has, like, been taken over, and, like, you didn't actually have to invite another 10 people. And I said it, and then I was able to enjoy the afternoon. Whereas if I just gotten on with it and been a martyr and, I've got to, make these burgers and blah, 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 I would have just not enjoyed the afternoon. But I just cleared the air. Chris heard me, and that was that. And I think that, I do that all the time to Chris. I'm like, hey, this really pissed me off. It's fine. Just don't do it again. And then that's that. And also I do think that there, you do have a responsibility in your relationship that if you don't tell someone that something annoyed you, how are they to know? Particularly men. Yeah. I'm sorry, you just have to lay it out.
They're not
my readers. They're not. Mm-hmm. They're not. They're not going to figure it out, so just tell them.
Yeah. Yeah, sometimes I get annoyed at Nick for not doing what I wanted him to do, and then he's like, you didn't tell me. You didn't ask me. He's like, ask for what you want. He's like, what do you want? What do you want? I'm like, well, it's up to you. He's like, no, stop. He's like,
I want you to want to do it for me.
I want you to take Sol to the park. I need to have a bath. I don't know, whatever.
And he would probably drop everything and do it instantly, right?
He's like, cool, okay, now I know what you would like. I can provide that for you rather than you beating around the bush with weird manipulative comments about just shit.
Babe, I remember having a very similar conversation with Chris. I think I must have been like trying to, manipulate him into doing something but not actually saying it and getting annoyed that, like, he didn't want to, like, surprise me with a date night or something. And Chris said to me, he's like, babe, I would literally do anything for you. All you have to do is ask me. Like, I would move mountains for you. And it kind of hit me, like, but what he wants and what he needs in our relationship is for me to just voice it. Doesn't mean I do it all the time, it's but it's simple. Something that I'm working on.
Totally.
So shall we dive into these follower questions?
Yeah, I'm curious.
Okay, first one. How do I tell my husband that he needs to up his game in the bedroom without hurting his feelings? Because girl has needs. I feel like this is a really cool opportunity. Oh, sorry. There you go.
I go.
I was just going to say, I think this is a really cool opportunity for us to talk about communication in the bedroom and how to, like, tell someone whether they need to change something little to the left or whether, like, you want to introduce something new. I'm really glad that she sent this question in.
Yeah, and so many people will relate. So I use the sandwich method, which is you start with a compliment, then you go to the
feedback,
feedback, and then you end with a compliment. So how does she bring this up? I'm just thinking how I would do it. I would just probably not do it as we're about to have sex, because that can be a bit jolting and it can take the mood out of the situation. But it could be like, hey, you're cuddled up on the couch. Babe, I want to chat about how I'm feeling at the moment. And I loved the other night when we had sex. It just felt so good to connect with you in that way. And, I love it when you do X, Y, Z. And something that I guess really would love to explore with you is a bit more slowness and presence or whatever you need. I feel like we've kind of got into a bit of a routine. This is just an example. I'm just rattling off. I feel like we've gotten stuck in a bit of a routine of, like, you go down to me, then I don't know, we have sex and then you come, I come, and we go to sleep. But I've been thinking it would be cool to mix it up and, like, do something different. Like, maybe we could go to a hotel soon and, like, have some raunchy sex or I don't know, whatever it is that you want. And then, so it's kind of like suggest seeing what you want in a gentle, kind way, and then being like, and I just want you to know I fucking love you and I think you're the sexiest man alive and I just want to explore more with you. Like, how does it feel for you? Like, does this sound like something you want to explore with me? So that's a way you can do it, because if we don't do it like that, what it can come out like is, you know what, like, I'm fucking sick of it all being about you. Like, it's always about you getting your blowjob. You know, you don't even go down on me anymore. It's like blame, 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 shame, shame, shame. And then he's going to be like, fuck you. I don't even want to fuck you anyway, because you're a pest and you're annoying and you've communicated in a really blaming way and your heart isn't open. He won't say that, but that's what he'll feel. So the important thing is when we're asking for what we want or we're communicating how we feel is to, like, do it with an open heart, like really soften. Especially as women, into like what we truly need, not what we think we need, but like what does our heart need, you know? Because if our hearts open, our pussy opens more. That's something men need to understand.
What I really took away from that is, because the question was like, my husband needs to up his game. But what I took away from that was, while you addressed the fact that they needed to up their game, what you actually did was you came to the table with suggestions and a solution, rather than just saying, hey, you're being a bit shit, you're being selfish, or what. I don't know what the specifics are, but what I read when I read needs to up his game is that he ain't given her what she needs. It's all about him. Maybe he's not going down on her, or maybe he's not taking the time to like be a bit romantic with it. It's all a bit wham bam thank you ma'am. So that's a really cool bit of feedback for us all to remember, is like, it's not necessarily about the point that you're trying to make. It's about being open and having suggestions, and once again, like we just talked about, voicing what it is that you want, because 9 times out of 10 they'll bloody do it. You just got to tell them.
Yeah, totally. And they may be feeling the same, but they're not saying it. They may be like, oh, God, they may be feeling unconfident or just a bit stuck in the bedroom, or a bit like, I don't know, self-conscious. We don't know, like, what's going through their head if we don't talk about it. So it's just important to bring it up. And it can be awkward and it can lead to conflict. But if you don't talk about it, it's just nothing changes. Nothing changes if nothing changes.
I love it. Hey, your sound has just gone a little bit funny. Did the headphones disconnect or something?
No.
Sounds like windy.
Wait, hang on. It's raining.
Ah, that's what it is.
It's heavy rain.
Oh, beautiful. That's all right. Yeah. I'm not even going to cut that out. If you were wondering what that was, it's the rain. Continue. Classic. Yeah, classic. It's Northern rain. Rivers.
Yeah.
Okay, next question. I think my husband has low sex needs or is actually asexual. This has become far more obvious since we've had kids. How do I navigate this?
Okay. So my question to that person would be, what was your sex life like when you first met, and how has it changed? Like, so it's hard for me to give a blanket answer to that, like a generic answer, because I need more data basically on the relationship. But often if a relationship comes together, if you come together and your sex life is great, you have lots of sex, or you have perhaps not heaps of sex, but when you do, it's like mind-blowing, and then it tapers off, or then you have children and it changes, then we know that there's a really great foundation there, that there's two humans who have a strong sexual attraction to each other, but it's changed due to lots of different factors coming into the relationship. Where it can be difficult is if I ask a couple or an individual, what was it like at the start? And they go, to be honest, it's never really been that great. Then that's when it's tricky, because when we add in kids, busy lives, jobs, living together, a death in the family, whatever happens, you know, the big life.
Oh, I've just lost you. Hold on.
Oh.
Can you repeat that last little bit? So a death in the family, sure. Having children, the big life happenings.
Yeah. So the big life stuff that can happen. If our sex life didn't have a good foundation at the start, and then all these things come into play, and then it's still not great, that's when it can be tricky to change, because there never really was that great foundation. Do you get where I'm coming from?
Massively.
Yeah, so it's easier to work with a couple when I know that. And there's a lot of hope for couples when, you know, when you first came together, it was great. It's gone to shit, but let's get it back to where it was, as opposed to when it was always shit.
If it's always shit,
communication.
How would you diagnose someone who is asexual or just doesn't really have sexual needs?
I haven't worked heaps with asexuality, in all honesty. Like, I'm not even going to pretend that I have. It hasn't been something that's come up much in my practice as a sexologist. Often it isn't asexuality. It's more that different things have happened throughout the life of that person. A lot of the time it can be trauma that hasn't been addressed in childhood. It can be a traumatic event in adulthood that has impacted their libido. And, you know, we go back to our libido being decommissioned when we're stressed or something difficult happens. That's what can happen. But it can be a lot of things. It can be an accumulation of conflict in a relationship. It could be that they're getting harassed at work and we don't even know, but that's just like shutting them down sexually. Another one is they're up in their head so much with work that all the energy is in their head, and our sexual energy resides in the lower chakras of our body. So it's down here in the base of our body. I'm saying down here and I'm like moving, I'm touching my like womb space, and you know, down here where our sex, like our sexual energy is, you know, the Kundalini energy, if you've heard of that, it's like at the base of our spine. It can't move if we're so stuck up in our head that we're not even tapping into those lower chakras in our body. So there's so many different things that impact why that person's husband has shut down sexually. But if you're at the stage where you're like, far out, I think he could be asexual, then my advice again is to go and seek the help of someone like myself. Right now I'm not doing one-on-one, so I'm not doing this to promote myself, because I can't take on more clients. However, I can refer people to other people who could help. But yeah, get the help of a professional, do some couples therapy. You know, if you're dedicated to each other and committed to the relationship, then it takes work, and this is, you know, a hurdle that you can overcome.
Thank you. I feel like once again, this has been a really good episode around addressing sexuality from a holistic standpoint. And I think that there are a lot of people who kind of assume that it's niche, it's in its own box. It's like, get some horny goat weed. You know, yeah. You just need to watch some porn with your partner, whatever. But I feel like the resounding kind of moral of this story, of this podcast, is that, like, you need to look after yourself. Okay. I am deeply insecure. Next question, sorry, should have said. Yeah. I'm deeply insecure about my body, and I never feel comfortable being naked or having sex when it isn't in the dark. Please help me.
This is a big one for a lot of women in particular. It can happen with men too. Body image, you know, low self-esteem, shame around how our body is, the size of it, etc., always comes into play when we have sex, because naturally it's like when we're most naked, literally, unless we're doing it with clothes on or lights off, but we're still naked and open and vulnerable. And so it's really natural first for these insecurities to come up and for them to hinder our sexual experiences. And there's lots of different factors that contribute to why we feel this way. It's often something from childhood. Like for me, you know what? I remember this moment where Mum said, I was playing, I was probably 9 or 8 or something, and I was playing with a friend, maybe I was younger, and Mum said to someone, I don't know whether it was her friend or auntie, she said, wow, she's big boned like her grandma. And I heard it in the background and I took it as like, I'm a big girl, even though I wasn't. When I was a teenager, I got chubby, but, you know, that's pretty normal. But I then kind of, I think that's, it just kind of made me think, oh, am I a bigger girl, you know, because I heard my mum say that. So that, identifying that moment and then getting some therapy around that and what story I put to it and what I made it mean about myself really helped me with body image stuff. So it's really cool to unpack again, you know, what messages we've been given to us as a child, what role models we've had, how they've role modeled health. And so that's one thing is like, I'm not just going to tell you to go do Pilates and eat organic food, because that's not going to, that could be a band-aid solution on top of something that deeper going on for this person. Or it could be as simple as, you know, okay, if you're not feeling good in your body, what is it that you don't like? Can you begin to do some movement that you love? Don't do it if you don't love it, because then it's just shit doing exercise you hate. Can you eat better? Can you make some better choices so that you have more energy in your body, firstly, and more vitality, and begin to, you know, stand in front of the mirror and be proud of the fact that you're not nourishing your body every single day and making that choice. Those simple things can really help, but often there's something underneath. So, yeah, does that answer it?
Yeah. And I think I mean, look, these are obviously complicated questions, and you know, you're not going to be able to answer them in full, but I think it's a nice conversation point for us. I think that one of the things that for me as a woman has helped my body acceptance kind of journey is being able to identify things that I'm proud that my body can do, rather than associating it with what it looks like. And actually for me, I found that my confidence levels in my physical form were really transformed through pregnancy and breastfeeding and birth and beyond, because it wasn't fucking about what it looked like. It was about the body's function. And, you know, like I remember I held this belief for so long, probably because, you know, it is difficult. It is an art form. Breastfeeding isn't guaranteed. But I had this concern in the back of my mind for forever that I might not be able to breastfeed, and that I was broken, and that my breasts like just weren't going to function. And then having actually a really positive experience with breastfeeding and deeply connecting with my child and enjoying that really made me kind of be like, oh, you're not so bad after all, boobies. Like, good on you. You know, you're doing what I wanted you to do, which is obviously a very niche kind of point. And I understand that sentiment might actually be very triggering for women who weren't able to breastfeed. But you can flip that in so many ways. Like, for example, most women are really self-conscious of their tummy area, right? It's just kind of like it is an area where women are naturally soft, and yet in the past 15 years, society has kind of ingrained this thing that it's actually people expect their body to be cut and hard and really toned when most feminine bodies are actually quite soft and curvy in that area. I found it wildly liberating having a big bump, because it is suddenly like, A, you're so proud of this miracle that's happening in your body. B, it like bigger is better. Like you're enjoying the shape and the form, and you're kind of letting it all hang out, and you're embracing these new curves. I just found it really, really, really liberating. And like, I really enjoy wearing tight clothes when I'm pregnant and like showing off my bump. But then like, you know, and this is something I need to work on with myself in my postpartum period, is like I'll often say flippantly, you know, oh, I'll wear this dress when I'm pregnant, but like I won't want to wear it when I'm not pregnant because it's tight in that area. But I just think that being able to find ways, and that's really specific to me, you know, ways that my body has functioned that make me proud of them. You could look at your legs and have maybe had this thing in the back of your mind since you're a kid that your thighs are too thick or whatever, and you don't have little skinny toothpick legs, but maybe, you know, you've just done your personal best squat, or you've just gone on an incredible long coastal walk with a friend, or you, you know, you undertook a 3-day hike. Like, wow, those fucking legs gave me that experience. Like, how grateful I am to even have them. And I know that sounds kind of naff, but, you know, it's shit that works.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Whenever I say, like, in my postpartum phase with Sol, I remember saying I actually really struggled with body stuff because I just couldn't seem to shake off the weight. And I'd say to Nick, like, I really need to exercise and lose weight. And he's like, no. He's like, you need to have a goal. What's your goal? Like, is it to, you know, how you want to feel and what you want to achieve? Is it like you want to run 2Ks or I don't know, whatever? Make it about like feeling like, yeah, like what you're saying, it's hard to say, but don't make it about I'm exercising because I need to shed this weight. Do it because you have this bigger goal and this bigger vision in mind that inspires you, you know? And that was really good for me to be reminded of.
Yeah, and like I think kind of what you and I are both saying right now is that even though like we're both in the wellness space and, you know, you're a therapist, you're a sexologist, it doesn't mean that like you didn't struggle with your own relationship with your body postpartum. And just because like I'm a Pilates instructor, it didn't mean that like I didn't like feel, you know, like my body wasn't broken or that it wasn't something to be proud of. We're all just bloody human at the end of the day.
Mm-hmm.
I've got two more follower questions.
Okay.
My partner and I have become so disconnected that his touch actually makes me recoil or feel really frustrated. Everything feels really unnatural. What do I do?
This is a tricky one. Okay, you need to communicate it to your partner, but you're not going to say to him, your touch makes me feel gross. I hate you. I don't think I can do this anymore. Because that's just going to create even more stuff. You could say that to me or a friend, but, you know, try and refrain from being so harsh. But it is important to communicate. How I would do it is say, you know, when's a good time to speak about something that's important to me? So first setting a time, don't just launch it on him when he walks in from work or when you've trapped him in the car on the way to a family gathering. Inappropriate.
Or like, isn't that the best time to bring something up? They can't run away.
I trapped Nick recently in the shower and I could see what was going on. I opened the shower door. I was fuming and he just started his shower. There was nowhere for him to go. And I remember just being like, I just want to say, and he just the look on his face, and then I just went off, and then I was like, and that's that, and then I closed it, and I was like, what a fucking idiot. That was the worst thing to do to him. He couldn't escape. He was in this, you know, anyway, really inappropriate way to communicate. So ask when's a good time to talk about something that's important to you, and then that's important to me, set a time. He might say, yeah, now's good, or he might be like, I'm so tired. Can we do it tomorrow? Whatever. And then just be like, you know, I've just been feeling like really disconnected. I love you, but I've been feeling really disconnected. I often dream about the days when we would have really amazing lovemaking or, you know, when we'd have all that kinky sex, whatever it is. And I really miss that time. And I feel like right now, if anything, I'm just so shut off to connecting with you in that way that it's worrying me. And I was just wondering how you're feeling about it. And then just let him see what's going on for him. And then opening up the conversation is really important. And then again, and I know I keep saying this, just seek some help outside. You can't do this alone. Like, these are really complex issues. Like, if someone's feeling repulsed by the touch of their partner, then there's something complex going on, and it may be a quick fix, but often it isn't. Often it's like a few sessions to kind of figure out, okay, what is it? Did something happen? you know, or is there something that's been triggered from your past, whatever it is, get really clear on that. And then you know how to communicate even more effectively about why it's the case. Because if you don't know why, you're really just saying your touch makes me feel repulsed. And they're like, great, where do we go with this? I now feel shit. My partner doesn't, you know, it's like do a lot of self-inquiring into why you feel the way you do.
I think that really feeds back to that ability to have self-awareness and to do the work on yourself, because your partner's touch making you recoil is really about you, isn't it? It's not about them. It's not about them reaching out to touch you. It's about your reaction and why it's triggering such a response.
I mean, you know, it could be about them. Like there's, you know, really simple things like if someone doesn't have good personal hygiene, which is really common, like a lot of people come to me and they're like, my partner stinks. Like, you know, really? He or she does not use deodorant. Their breath stinks. They come home from work and they don't have a shower. They get straight into bed. Like, I'm just repulsed. You know, really simple stuff where I'm like, all right, this is a personal hygiene thing. And
we can fix this.
So they're kind of easy ones. Yeah, yeah. It's like you need to communicate that, you know, X, Y, Z. So there are really simple ways to fix these things, but it's hard for me to know if I don't have any more information about why that person's feeling repulsed. You know, another one is like if you have a partner who drinks but you don't, or you don't often, but they say are like a high-functioning alcoholic or whatever, so every night they're drinking and they get into bed at night with this gross alcohol on their breath, or, you know, the smell of cigarettes or weed or whatever it is, then that can be really repulsive. And that's something that we can identify and then communicate and come up with solutions for.
And I imagine it would be quite triggering to see their behavior when they're drinking or smoking weed or whatever as well. Like, I'm just trying to think if I was in a relationship with someone who was a functioning alcoholic and every time they'd had 3+ glasses of wine, they started to get a bit handsy and wanted to have a nice conversation. Yeah. I'd be like, oh, like you do this every fucking night and I'm not interested in drinking because I'm trying to look after myself and blah, blah, blah. Yeah, that's a really interesting point. Okay, last one. I can't orgasm with my partner. I can when I'm alone, but I need a lot of time, a vibrator, and sometimes porn. Will he ever be able to make me come?
Well, it's a good thing that she can make herself come, because that's the first go-to. Lots of women want their partner to make them have an orgasm, but they don't take responsibility for their own orgasm and they don't even know how to touch themselves. So, like, step one, learn how to self-pleasure, enjoy self-pleasure, know what turns you on, what doesn't. So that's good. She's got that down pat.
Tick, baby.
Tick. You're on the right track. Next would be us talking to your partner about it, because this can be an elephant in the room for a lot of relationships when one person isn't having, you know, an orgasm and the other person is. It can often be the woman, the man's just ejaculating, but it, you know, it can be the other way around. Often there's someone who finds it perhaps a little bit more challenging to have an orgasm than the other. So communicating like, okay, I've been feeling like I really love sex with you. I just want to work on, you know, being able to come with you more, having more orgasms with you. And this is what I need to like be able to come. I need to feel safe. So I don't want to be, I don't know. I find it easier when our flatmates aren't home, or when your mum isn't in the house, whatever it is, or when the kids are asleep. I don't know. Whatever you need. I need to slow things down and not have the expectation of orgasm, not make it about you just rubbing my clit just to make me come. I want it to be more than that. And then, communicating like what you need, specifically what you need. For me, it's like knowing that my partner isn't going to just rush off to work or jump in the shower or whatever afterwards. So like when Nick and I first started dating, I kind of communicated him to that after sex, this is what I need to really enjoy sex. So if I know that you're not rushing off, then I can let go, because then I know afterwards I get what I need, rather than be anxious thinking, oh my God, he's going to fuck me and leave basically. And then it trigger my abandonment wound. If I know he's not going to do that, then I can experience more orgasmic pleasure. So identify what you need and communicate it. And then just be really patient. Like men, every single woman's body is different and we don't all work the same. So hopefully he's willing to take the time to explore. And that's something you need to encourage him to do. But you can show him the way, like bring the vibrator into the room, you know, masturbate in front of him or incorporate it into sex, like hold it on your clit while he's inside you. Do whatever you need to do. Touch your clit to have the orgasm. Do, you know, he doesn't need to have to do it straight away. You can incorporate your self-pleasure into lovemaking with him. And that's something that sometimes people get a bit, like, hesitant to do because it can feel vulnerable, but it's worth it. And we need to take it into our own hands, literally, sometimes as women.
Mm. Mm. What really strikes me is how, and you've said it, is how different we all are. You know, like when you said, for me to really be able to let go and enjoy sex, I need to not worry that we're going to be in a rush as soon as it's done, which is makes sense. But I was also like, oh gosh, that has never like occurred to me. That wouldn't really bother me if we've got to get up and go and do something, or if Chris is going to jump in the shower. But for me, like, I really, my ability to orgasm is so linked to my mental state and my ability to switch off, which you're actually saying the same thing. You can switch off if you know that you're not going to rush off, because that's linking back to an abandonment issue from your childhood. Whereas for me, I think like my ability to come isn't always physical. Like, you could do the exact same thing and I might have an orgasm and then the next time I wouldn't, because if I'm thinking about something else or there's a sound in the background that's distracting me, I'm out. Like, I just can't do it. Like, I really have to deeply connect mentally to be able to release physically.
Interesting. People would relate to that, definitely. Yeah.
And also I think, like, for me, maybe not feeling like it was a rush, because if I'm like, oh my God, he's been going down on me for this long and I still haven't come, well, that's it. Well, I'm just not going to come now. I'm just sorry. I've put a time limit on it.
Yeah, totally.
And I feel pressure. If I feel pressure to come, I'm just not going to come. I really need to feel like you are enjoying it and there is no rush, and then it's all going to be good times.
Yeah, it's, I find it hard when, for example, say we wake up and we know our baby's going to wake up soon, so then we kind of rushing, and then I'm like, I don't even want to do this right now, like, because if he's going to wake up and then it's cut short. We all need different things, basically, so find out what it is you need, communicate that, and see if he can deliver, basically. And if he can't, then that's the next conversation to be had.
Absolutely. Well, I feel like we could just continue talking for days, and I could have included way more of the follower questions. But in true Tory form, we've gone for over an hour. But I do I do really want to finish with some rapid fire questions. This is something that I've been doing in this new season of the potty. And it's just really about you, because as much as, you know, this episode was about your profession and what you can offer our listeners in terms of, like, your knowledge in that space, I'm also just really interested in Juliet as a person. So these are the questions that I find intriguing and that I'm sure our listeners will as well.
Okay, let's do this.
Okay, first one, it's a bit mumsy, but we're mums. What do you love most about motherhood?
Just the love that I feel for my children and the the closeness that we have. And, you know, now like hearing Sol say, mummy, mummy, like it's just so sweet to hear him say that. And even putting him to bed last night, he was like, kept giving me kisses. Like he's in this kissing phase where he just wants to give me kisses and really cuddle. He has to be cuddled really closely to go to sleep. And I just love those moments of stillness and connection. Mm. It's just, it's like nothing else.
Like yeah. nothing else, that deep connection and the way that they crave it and the way that you're like, that's their way of saying to you that you're their safe place. So beautiful.
Yeah. Yeah.
What has your proudest moment been in your motherhood journey?
Oh, look, there's so many. Like, I really love being a mum and I feel like I am a good mum. I'd say a recent proud moment would be birthing my son because it was just really healing. I birthed him at home in the lounge room and it was the most beautiful experience of my life. Like, it was just so amazing and healing from the birth of my daughter, which was still great, but a little bit, it was in the hospital and a little bit more traumatic. And yeah, just my body just doing its thing and proud of myself for trusting my body in those moments. And yeah, that's was my huge, proudest moment.
Huge, particularly after a birth that left you with a little bit of trauma, to have the trust to do it differently. That's cool.
Mm.
Okay. Let's take motherhood out of this. What are you most proud of? Well, what's an achievement? Because obviously, there's many things that you'll be proud of, but what is an achievement outside of motherhood that you are proud of? It could be personal life, career, whatever.
My career is a big achievement. Yeah, I spent years studying new businesses and exploring different careers, and then when I found like myself studying sexology, it just felt so natural and my business has just been so successful. And so yeah, that's my biggest achievement outside of being a mum for sure, is just having so much success. And yeah, it's fun and I love it. It doesn't feel like work.
Fuck yes. Isn't it so funny how things happen when you're in alignment as well?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely.
You don't have to push. Yeah. Okay, here's one for the sexologist. When do you feel sexiest?
Aside from when I'm feeling great pregnant, I actually really love my pregnant body and I go through phases in pregnancy when I feel really sexy. But taking that out, because that's, it doesn't happen often.
if only you could just be pregnant forever.
When I'm eating really well and exercising heaps and taking care of my mental health, that's when I feel sexiest. I just feel so great in my body. I feel strong. I feel like have heaps of energy. When I'm surrounded by people who are just epic humans, that's when I feel sexiest. Yeah. That's when I'm taking care of myself. Mm.
When do you feel least sexy? I mean, the answer's sort of in front of us now, isn't it?
Postpartum. I'm going to be honest. Probably after I've had my baby and after all the great trippy hormones have stopped. And then I'm like, oh, okay. Wow, I don't have my belly anymore. And now, yeah, just postpartum, I can feel a bit like icky, but then, I get my mojo back eventually.
It's such a period of transition and we expect so much of ourselves. It is ridiculous. I saw this meme on Instagram that said, isn't it wild that like dad bods are like this celebrated and accepted thing? But like a woman's postpartum body isn't, but they're the one who fucking grew the baby. Like they're the one who physically grew the baby. And everyone's like, dad bod. I'm like, but you didn't house a child.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I hear you.
What is in your fridge every week without fail? Like you just cannot not have it in the fridge at all times.
Butter. Like a really good block of like organic, delicious butter. Avocados are big. There's always avocados in our house. We have so many avocados. Usually there's a block of like some sort of sprouted bread or something. Like I try to avoid sourdough and all that because it's just not, but I get the, yeah, anyway, I either make some healthy bread or so then I can have avocado and toast because I love it. Eggs, I could go on. Eggs, butter, avocado, sprouted bread. There you go. There's four things.
Okay, those are your go-tos. I'm a huge butter fan as well. I actually keep our butter in a glass dish in the pantry so that it is always readily spreadable. Highly recommend if it's not something that you're doing already.
I like the chunkiness of cold butter.
Okay. I just want to slather it
Because
on.
then it.
I don't want work,
Yeah.
you know?
Yeah.
I'm busy. I've got no
Yeah,
time. Death row meal.
Oh, my, I call it my last supper, is lasagna. Just like, just a good old meat lasagna. And although I do like a vegetarian lasagna, and apple crumble and vanilla ice cream. It's not exotic at all. It's so mainstream, but those two things, especially in winter, I love.
Crumble. Oh, I have a really good healthy crumble recipe that I'm going to send you. Life-changing,
Send
and it's
it.
so easy. I'm a crumble girl. My mum, I grew up, well, like crumble was big in our house. My mum was always just in there, like neat, you know,
Yeah, me too.
what do you call it? Like kneading the butter.
Fingering.
Yeah, finger, basically fingering butter and oats
Fingering the
and
butter.
flour and just like, you know, you can never have enough crumble either. Like, let's not go light on the
Yeah.
crumble. Of course, a vanilla bean ice cream, essential.
Yes.
You know,
Yeah.
apples, sometimes I like to add a little berry in there as well. It's quite
Or
nice.
rhubarb. Sometimes my mum
Oh,
makes rhubarb crumble.
same. My mum makes the best rhubarb crumble. Must be like an Aussie thing. Okay, two more questions and we're done. What is a cringeworthy moment that your brain reminds you of when you're trying to sleep at night? You know, when you're like trying to get to bed and you're like, your brain's like, hey, remember that time when you were 15 or just something that you're that keeps you up at night and you're like, why am I thinking about this? I've put it to bed.
Oh, I don't know. I don't really have heaps. There was a time in Brazil when I lived there that I was walking along the beach and I had this string bikini on, and I went to tighten one of the strings on the bottom at the side. And as I went to undo the string, and this is a packed, it was a packed beach, Brazilian beaches, just people everywhere. And I undid the tie, and as I did, my friend came up from behind to say, you should pull your bikinis up your bum more. But what happened was she pulled it and then she pulled the bikini off. So I was like, you know, just full blown.
Badge
Yeah. And I
out.
was really young. I was vag out on the packed beach. That was so long ago, but that is probably one of the most embarrassing moments, especially as like a teenager. Oh my God, terrible. But it doesn't keep me up at night, not anymore.
But it's something that you remember. Isn't it funny
Yeah.
the things that our brains can kind of hold on to? Okay, I'm finishing with an OG Peaches podcast question. This is something that we used to actually ask
What is
people
it?
at the start of the podcast, kind of as a way to like lubricate the conversation. I want to know what your pet peeve is. What is something that like
Oh.
you're like, oh my fucking God, whether it's other people or like something specifically that your partner does, and it is just like you can't stand it.
Being late, which is so ironic because I was late today to this, but that was like traffic issues, you know? I'm like, it wasn't me being disorganized. I left so freaking early. Anyway, being late, and my partner Nick is always fucking late. His time management skills are terrible. He knows that I think this. And, but it's not just Nick. It's like, yeah, I'm a real like, okay, if I need to be there at 10, I backtrack, I leave at 9, whatever it is. Pet peeve is time management issues.
My husband is really anal about being on time. His family is like full on with it, like to the point that if there's like a lunch or something, there's like tension in the house 30 minutes before you have to leave. And I'm like a pretty prompt. I'm not one of those like always late people, but I'm definitely, my husband thinks I'm like way too relaxed with stuff. And I'm always like, man, your family has like built in this anxiety around time management. Like, it's all going to be fine. And if we get to the restaurant 5 minutes late, who gives a fuck? So he can probably really relate to you. So maybe you guys should get together and you can bitch about me and your man. I just love knowing what makes people tick and what really irritates them. Just because it's kind of fun, you know?
Yeah, we all have our pet peeves, that's for sure.
Julia, thank you so much for your time. I really enjoyed that this episode. It was actually different to what I thought it was going to be, and I know I've already said it a few times throughout the episode, but I like that we had a real moral of the story here, and that we don't have overly complicated answers to most of our questions, and that really, like, the essence of all of this is just, like, prioritize you, look after yourself, and in so many ways, like, the things that are worrying you will naturally start to clear up. It's such a nice holistic approach. And it is achievable. Like, you're not saying you need to book a girls' weekend or go and stay in a luxury hotel for 3 nights. You're saying take an hour for a coffee. The next time your partner speaks, instead of saying something, listen. Like, really achievable, practical goals, homework for me personally and hopefully for our listeners. Thank you.
Oh, it's been a pleasure. I've really loved our conversation. So thanks for having me.
I also just really have to say, I like that you're not, I'm a sexologist and my life is perfect. And I like how you're kind of like, oh, yeah, like, you know, I cornered my partner in the shower and yelled at him the other day. Like, it's relatable. It's real. You make me feel like I can tell you that if I had a problem, I would come to you. So thank you. Like, I think that people probably, you know, like, isn't it funny, the world of Instagram? You know, you're like this stunningly beautiful dark-haired woman with the cascading curls and all these like really amazing engaging Instagram posts, but it's so nice to like open up behind the veil and just hear the woman who's behind the account, the woman who's behind the amazing work that she's doing, know that you're a human, know that like so much of your service and what you offer to people is things that you figured out through working on yourself. I think it's definitely so cool.
Yeah, I'm glad that you can feel that realness, because that's what I want. I don't want to be the, like, I'm a sexologist and my life is perfect, because it isn't. But I think that's the beauty of, you know, as a therapist, like, we have challenges too. We all have challenges, and to pretend that we don't is a joke. And those challenges for me are what, you know, allows me to be as good as I am in what I've chosen as a career. And, you know, to experience the really hard times in life, I'm always grateful. Like, in the moment, maybe it's hard, but I'm like, okay, cool. This will give me more empathy and compassion towards others. Now I get what it's like to feel, you know, I don't know, to have a miscarriage, or now I get what it's like to lose a loved one. I don't know. Like, in the thick of it, I'm like, okay, like, I've been through shitty breakups. Cool. Now I get it. Like, you know, and I'm not afraid to say that sometimes I have challenges. In fact, lots of the times. But, yeah.
It's just so refreshing. And I really think that, like, this lean towards people being authentic and showing up as their real selves is so fucking nice. So thank you for being one of those people, and thank you for inspiring me regularly. And I really hope that for anyone listening, you know, if you weren't aware of Juliet Allen, now you are. Go ahead and follow her on Instagram. You also have some pretty cool resources for people. I know that you're not taking on clients at the moment, but it doesn't mean that they can't support your work. So please make sure you jump on Juliet's website. I'm pretty sure you've got, like, have you got an e-course, like things like that?
Yeah, I've got a downloadable book. I've got an online course. I've got masterclasses, membership, all sorts of ways that people can dip their toes into my work for really minimal pricing or bigger investments. And Yeah, I'm also going to bring out, hopefully before Bubs, do a course for couples, which I think is just going to be so helpful for so many people, because there's so many couples who are finding, you know, relationships challenging. So yeah, just keep an eye on my Instagram. That's probably the best place. But get on my mailing list, actually, because lately I've been getting heaps of like warnings from Instagram that I'm inappropriate, which is absolute bullshit, because I'm not at all, like, compared to some accounts. But yeah, anyway, if you love me, you'll find me somehow.
Amazing. All right, guys. Well, thanks for tuning in. Bye.
Thank you.